Hey, you guys! It's Sunday.
Yeah.
I totally forgot that it was spring forward. That it was, what do you call it?
Yeah.
It's daylight savings time.
Yeah, it was.
It's like I woke up and I was like, wow, I overslept until like 8:30, which is like really, really late for me because usually I wake up at like before 7. But then I came in my office like after a few minutes and I was like, why is it 10 o'clock already? I'm like, that's not funny. And then I was like, oh, spring forward. So, you know.
Yes, I got up, did laundry, ran down to the biker bar, was there all day.
Yeah, he'd been at the biker bar all day.
Yeah.
You know what's really funny? I was, like, sitting here, and I was like, holy shit. Like, I did a bunch of shit today, and, you know, oh, well, okay. And did some videos, made some videos, and edited them and stuff. And then I'm like, oh my god, we have to do the show at 5. I'm like, did he forget, like, what time it was? Because we went forward on the thing, although his tablet should have updated automatically.
Yeah, it was all updated.
And then it's like 10 till, and I'm like, is he not coming back or whatever?
No.
And then, like, I had just got the new Ethernet cable. Because remember, we got the Ethernet cable before, and we hooked it up, and it worked really good, like on Friday night's show. But that Ethernet cable was only 50 feet long. So, like, right after that show, I ordered a 100-foot one, and it came like 15 minutes before the show started.
Yeah.
So I had to like unroll it and like take it like all the way down.
I hooked it up. That's what we're on now. It seems to be working good.
Yeah. So far.
Yeah. I was down at the biker bar, hanging out with those dudes and taking videos, and I was getting into it. I tell you that. And I fucking posted one of them, and DJ Maniac, he's online right now. He goes, dude, man, you need to get back. You got a fucking live stream. And I was like, oh, yeah. I guess I did.
Yeah,
so I shut it down right then, fucking made, and then came back.
See, we've even got, like, your, like, fans out there. It's like, Tom, get your dumbass home, please.
No, I was just, oh, I got a half hour. I'll be fine. I kept
because I'm sitting up
on
here going,
yeah, I got a half
I was
hour.
Like,
be
he's
fine.
In such big fucking trouble.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think he was going to get back in time. Because it's like, it was like quarter till, and I'm just sort of like 10 till or something. And I'm like, come on, what the fuck? I'm not doing this by myself.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I was getting all kinds of attention up there. So fucking, it's time to
Tom,
come back.
Like, Tom needs attention.
Getting all that fucking Tom attention and shit. Everybody buying me drinks and everything. So just how it is.
How many drinks did you get bought for you?
Two or three of them.
Oh, that's nice.
Two or three of them, and I paid for four myself.
Oh my
I walked
goodness.
Out of there with fucking $20. $20 is what it cost me.
Oh, okay, that's not bad.
No, that's not bad.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. No, they,
I'm trying to think. Well, I
no, they run easy on me. They're like here. I guess I'm entertaining everybody.
I spent $30 at Dollar General.
Yeah,
if that's any consolation.
Yeah, you choose some more cookies.
No.
Okay. What'd you
get? I got cat treats. I got some makeup I was out of. Mm. I got some coffee drinks in a can because they had them like 3 for $5 or something. They're and then I got some coffee creamer and like a couple other things. I don't remember. Just like stupid little shit. We're gonna talk about Beverly Hills Cop, right?
Right. Yeah. Great movie.
We watched it again. We watched it Friday night after the show. So, I was a little bit drunk, but, I mean, I'd seen it before. I've seen it, like, a million times. So I remember the shit that happens in it. And honestly, okay, here's something that I didn't know. I mean, there's all kind of fascinating facts about this fucking movie. But one of them that I didn't know was that the director of it, Martin Brest, who I would probably change my name if I was him, but, you know. He directed this. He wasn't the first choice. I think they wanted Martin Scorsese to do it, which would have been a whole different, ball game. But he actually, this was a massive success, obviously. He went on and did Midnight Run, which was, I think that was Robert De Niro, right? And like, so that, and then Scent of a Woman with Al Pacino, Meet Joe Black. And then after that, he did that fucking movie, Gigli, that one with Bennifer. Like, Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez, the one that everyone said was, like, the worst abomination ever.
I didn't see it.
I haven't seen it either. I kind of want to watch it just out of curiosity because it got shit on so hard by, like, pretty much everyone. It's one of those, like, infamous bad movies, like Showgirls or Ishtar or something like that. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know if I want to see it or not because... But it was one of those movies. And I didn't realize that that was the same guy that had directed Beverly Hills Cop.
Did he do Beverly Hills Cop 2?
I don't No, okay. That might have been a different, because I think we're gonna watch Beverly Hills Cop too, yeah. tonight and then talk about that tomorrow and maybe yeah. do the third one. So we might do the whole trilogy.
Because I'll tell you one thing, Beverly Hills Cop, this movie is a great movie. It's fun. It's a low budget movie, but it's just a great movie. There's something about the dialogue, Eddie Murphy, the music, the edit. It's a low budget movie, but it's punching way above its weight. I loved this movie from the time it came out, and there's so many memorable lines from this movie. Is it perfect? No, it's a low budget movie. It's just a good movie.
I think this only cost $15 million or
yeah, which that's
$20 million or something like that. And I have to say too that this was actually the highest grossing movie. Of 1984, at least like in North America, as far as I know. Hit. And think of all the other shit that came out in 1984. Yeah. Ghostbusters,
yeah.
Gremlins, The Terminator.
Yeah.
And this beat all of them.
Yeah, it was
this
a
made
huge hit.
Like $234 million fucking dollars.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, this was like a massive. Now, Eddie Murphy had been in a couple movies prior to this. I think he was only 23 when he made this movie.
It's ridiculous when you
he
look
had
at
done
it.
He did Trading Places before this, right?
I think
in
he
48
did, yeah.
hours, maybe.
Yeah.
So he was like a big star, but
I think...
He doesn't
come off as that young, though. He doesn't.
Yeah, he doesn't. I was actually surprised when I found out.
He comes off as a guy in his 30s, but no, he's real young. But it's just a great detective movie, even though he's a cop. But he's doing it, you know what I mean? He's still on the force. He's just doing this shit on his own. And it solidified this Axel Foley character in my mind. And I was just like, I just think he's a fucking great character. Now... Beverly Hills Cop 2, I remembered it being better. We're going to see it tonight. I remembered that being actually better than this one.
I mean, I'm sure I've seen all of them at one point or another, but honestly, this one is kind of the only one that sticks in my mind.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing the second one.
I remember 2 being better.
And I don't know, it'd be hard to be better than this one, though.
Well, we'll see, but I remember it being better. And then I remember 3 being not as good as 1 or 2.
I kind of feel like that's the overwhelming opinion that people were like, oh, the first two are great, and then the third one, But, you know, by the time you're getting to the third one, everyone's just kind of like, no thanks.
But one of the reasons why I remember revisiting this one, and I don't know if I told Jenny this, but the reason why I wanted to revisit it, because I have heard that the next Eddie Murphy movie to come out is going to be an Axel Foley movie.
They have been talking about it for a really long time.
Yeah. Now they came out with fucking Coming to America 2. It was a great movie. It was a good, great PG movie. You know, I think that was a Netflix only, wasn't it? When that came out, was it?
Yeah, it's a Netflix original.
Right, Netflix original.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's going to be the case with Beverly Hills Cop 4, but I have a good feeling that the next Beverly Hills Cop movie that comes out will be a hit. It'll be very good.
I mean, if they do a good job on it, I don't see why it wouldn't be. I mean, like I said, Coming to America 2 was all right, but, you know, Dolomite Is My Name was pretty fucking
much
fantastic.
Better. Yeah.
So,
that's
I don't
great
know.
That's a standalone.
I kind of feel like if they did Beverly Hills Cop, because look at all of the stuff that they're doing now, you know, with like reboots and stuff like that from the 80s, I feel like there's a really big audience out there for that. Do you know what's really interesting? I didn't know this prior to like researching this movie, but back in I think it was 2013, I want to say, they actually were going to do a TV series based on Beverly Hills Cop. They made a pilot. It was going to be, I think Eddie Murphy was going to be in it, but it was mostly going to be, the main character is going to be like his son, who was also a cop. And so they made the pilot, and you know, Judge Reinhold was going to be in it, and like, so they had some people from the original movie, but apparently like it didn't get picked up, so they just kind of like abandoned it.
They're in there going banana tip. That's right, banana in a tailpipe. There's so many fucking lines from this movie that are iconic. Even Jenny was like, "Oh, me and my brother used to say that." There's just a lot of shit when you were kids, and they played this over and over again on fucking cable. And me and Mike Kowalski, Grantors knows who he is. Me and Mike Kowalski would watch this shit on VHS fucking just over and over again. We just fucking loved it. This one and the second one. And there was just scenes in it that would stick in your head, you know. And you had to be there at the time. It wouldn't happen today because the social media just fucking overwhelms everything just with the sheer volume of data. But in the 80s, you know what I mean, you were limited. in what you could see and what you could get your hands on. And this bitch here was just, this is just a great movie. And we watched it last, what was it, last night or the night before?
It was Friday night we watched
Friday night.
It.
So yeah. I watched it and I was just like, this holds up. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, it totally does.
This holds up. It's a good movie. Yeah. And it's just a good detective movie. Is it accurate? No, it's not. We got Grampers in the audience. He's a professional policeman from this area, or ex-cop. You couldn't do the shit Axel did and got away with it. They would fucking fire your ass.
But that was kind of like, that's like a trope of like action movies and comedies, especially in the 80s, where, you know, the guy that doesn't play by the rules, but he gets the job done, so he gets away with it, even though he's always in trouble. That's kind of like, that's like
a big trope. Weird thing about this movie is that this movie was going to be a Sylvester Stallone movie.
Yeah.
But Sly said, well, I want this change. I want my name to be this and this and that.
Cope Ready.
Yeah, I want my name to be Axel Cope Ready. I want this to happen. And he went, nah, then this movie isn't for you.
No.
But another dude heard that and goes, no, I'll make that movie with you. I'll make that movie. And it split into two. It became Cobra. So Cobra was like kind of like the offspring of this movie. But originally it was going to be a fucking Sylvester Stallone flick.
Yeah, like dark and gritty.
Yeah.
And honestly, you know what's crazy to me? Like, you know, this many years later, considering how iconic this movie is, Eddie Murphy was absolutely not the first choice for this. Mm. You know who the first choice was? Mickey Rourke.
Oh, God. This movie would have been forgotten.
And Mickey Rourke, I love Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, he's good, but it would have been forgotten.
But I don't think that he was the right... Well, because when they were first, like, you know, throwing this around, like I said, Martin Scorsese was going to be the director on it. So they were kind of... At first, kind of going in a more like gritty action movie direction, but then as it evolved, they started like lightening it up more, so it was more like a comedy. But even then, I kind of feel like who the fuck else? There was like a bunch of other actors that they asked to be in it. There were some of them were comedic actors, but most of them were like kind of serious. And I just don't know how that would have worked out. But that's fucking funny about Sylvester Stallone. Yeah, so they asked him to be in it, and he's like, well, you know, he's a writer, too, obviously. And
he's
so
good
he's
dude.
Like,
real good dude.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I want to rewrite it. So he rewrote it to be, like, super, super dark and gritty.
Yeah.
So much so that they compared, like, his opening scene in it to... like the Normandy invasion, like it was gonna be this big fucking violent whatever.
Yeah.
And so they were just kind of like, no, we're gonna funny
pass.
Instead.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was that. But I do. It's just weird how it evolved over the years. And I think didn't they do a Movies That Made Us about this? I kind of feel like you know that Netflix series.
Yeah, I think maybe they did.
Did they? Because I really do feel like
maybe. It sounds familiar.
They did do
it. It was at least mentioned in it.
Yeah.
The thing is that Stallone actually had good ideas, but it was far outside the scope of what Beverly Hills Cop is. He was talking about Cobra, and somebody said, yeah, we'll do that, and then they made the movie Cobra. And I've seen that recently, about a year or two back, and Cobra actually kind of holds up. It's actually better than I remembered.
I'd have to watch it again. I remember not liking it when I saw it first time.
When I first saw it, I didn't like it. I saw it again, and I was like, no, this is actually pretty good.
It's funny because they actually made a joke about that in Beverly Hills Cop 2, where I think there's actually a poster of Cobra in there in the background. Right. And I think What's-Her-Face is in it too, that was in Cobra. What's her name? Brigitte Nielsen. Yeah, I think she like turned up in both movies. Like it's kind of like a joke. Yeah.
She's in both movies.
That's what I'm saying.
She's in part two.
Yeah, so that's why they were like kind of making a joke about that.
Fucking Cobra, I didn't like it the first time I saw it, but on repeated viewings, I said, no, it's pretty good. Is it as good as Beverly Hills Cop? No.
Fuck no.
No. Beverly Hills Cop's better.
I mean, very few movies are as good as Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? I see, because I'm always interested, especially movies that came out in the 80s, like when I was growing up, that I saw when I was younger. And a lot of times, you know, stuff that you saw, some of them you see them later and you're like, oh my God, that sucks so bad. You just like it because of nostalgia. So I'm always kind of interested in people that weren't even fucking born when this shit came out. And then they see it for the first time, like recently. And I'm always kind of interested how they see it. So I saw this one reviewer who... He's not that young. He said he was born in 1988, but he had never seen this movie, and he watched it last year. And he just thought, he said he was a fan of Eddie Murphy's, like, old stand-up. Mm. So he had seen that, but he had never really seen, he had never seen this movie. And he just thought this was, like, one of the funniest things that he'd ever seen.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, the humor does still hold up for, like, younger people seeing it now for the first time, even though you don't have the context.
Well, the world holds up.
Yeah.
That this is in. This is happening in the 80s, in Detroit, and in Beverly Hills. And it's a fish out of water story about a cop who went rogue to become a private investigator to solve the murder of one of his hoodlum friends. And he has to go to Beverly Hills to do it, where it's fucking, especially in those days, fucking polar opposites. Detroit was fucking broke. It was fucking broke. Even Grampus is saying that if you were a Detroit cop back in those days, you didn't have any goddamn money. They didn't pay peanuts.
Yeah.
He goes to Beverly Hills, the fucking richest neighborhood in the United States at that time, to solve a murder. He's a total fish out of water. He's in his old fucking jalopy, his old fucking beat up car.
I love
car.
That.
There's fucking DeLoreans.
Because I still have a jalopy fucking, nowadays, yeah. So I'm always kind of
and he's trying to survive around these cops, and he's, according to his job, according to his boss. Now, his boss in this movie, Grampus mentioned this too.
Yeah, a couple people mentioned
it. I believe he really was the chief of police.
Yeah, or he was a cop at least.
At least a cop. I think he was the chief of police at that time. Plays the chief of police of the Detroit Police Department in the movie. It is actually him. I think he was the chief of the police. That's the way I remembered it. He did a cameo role as himself.
Like yelling at Axel Foley.
Yelling at Axel Foley. Chief, I'll tell you what. No, you got some ass left. I can see you walked away. You got some ass left. For some reason, that line always makes me laugh.
That's stupid. That always like maybe you yeah. still got some ass left.
Yeah, you still got some ass left. Dude, don't fuck with me, Foley.
Well, the awesome thing about this is like, I mean, Eddie Murphy improvised a lot of that. You know the one scene where he's talking about like the two cops, like fucking Judge Reinhold and the other guy, and he's saying it's like, you know, these aren't even just cops, they're super cops, all they're missing are the capes. And that was all improvised. Mm-hmm. I was watching something earlier, I think it's Minty Comedic Arts, he's this Australian guy, and he does like all these fun facts about different movies, and he loves 80s movies. So he was talking about this one, and he said that Eddie Murphy at this time, that he was getting like really tired because they'd done so many takes, and they were like, well, can we give you something to like pep you up? And he's like, look, I don't want any, he didn't even want any coffee because he's like, I don't want any drugs or anything of that kind. But they were like, come on, just, you know, please. So they kept giving him like little bits of coffee so he would get all like fucking perked up. And I guess because he didn't drink coffee at that time, I guess it affected him a lot more than it would normally. So they said, yeah, he was all hopped up on caffeine during that scene. But yeah, he did improv a lot of shit. And a lot of the shit that he improvised, you know, are some of the best lines in the movie. I wonder if the whole, like, you still have some ass left line, because that's one of my favorite
lines.
There's
no telling. Well, I talked about this on one of our earlier shows, and I mentioned Eddie. Eddie Murphy, for y'all who are too young to remember, almost I am too young to remember this, okay? Because a lot of this was going on when I was a little kid. Saturday Night Live was almost getting ready to get canceled. All the good talent, like John Belushi and all these guys, had died or left the show. And Saturday Night Live was going to die. Eddie Murphy basically single-handedly saved Saturday Night Live back in the 80s. He had a really good energy. He was real fucking funny. And on the back of some of the improv skits that he would come up with, Saturday Night Live was able to kind of recruit more talent because Eddie was there.
Yeah.
You know, but without Eddie, SNL would have been under long time ago. You know, long time ago. So he kind of saved that. SNL is not funny anymore. It's fucking shit. But.
Well, I don't think it's. I haven't watched it, so I can't really say. But I kind of feel like it wasn't funny even when. Even back in the 90s.
Even in the 90s, it wasn't funny.
had its moments, but.
Yeah. Eddie and the generation that he kind of brought in was the last of the funny for SNL. But Eddie was very fucking talented. He came from a time when you didn't carry a a fucking camera around in your pocket. When he came from a time when if somebody, when a camera was huge, and when they put it on you, it put a lot of stress on you. Okay? He wasn't camera shy at all. He could improv and act. Back when film cost a lot of money. You know what I'm talking about? Where doing six seconds of bullshit cost fucking thousands of dollars.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was a different time. He was ahead of his time. And, man, I hope the next Eddie movie is Beverly Hills Cop 4. I hope they don't call it 4. They should have never called the shit 3 or 2. But that's just the way it was back then. We need another Axel Foley movie. Because
I would watch it.
On the back of what he's done so far with the Dolomite movie and Coming to America Part 2, Axel Foley, a new Axel Foley movie would be awesome. Especially when it had the right soundtrack. This is a great movie. If you guys haven't seen it, then it's a must watch. This one and Part 2.
Yeah, I mean, as far as 80s movies go, really got to see this one. Like I said, 1984 was such an iconic year for movies. Like I said, not only this one, but Ghostbusters. And actually, Eddie Murphy was actually offered a part in Ghostbusters, but he turned it down to do this.
Good choice,
because he was friends with Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
So that's why. So he did actually get asked to do that. But, I mean, that would work too, I think. But the thing about Eddie Murphy that's so cool, and not a lot of comedians have this, because some people are funny, but they can't be relatable or likable or sympathetic. But Eddie Murphy is absolutely funny, and he's like naturally funny. And he's also somebody you can relate to. He seems like a regular guy, and he seems like a likable, sympathetic character.
Yeah.
Which, like I said, a lot of comedians can't really do that.
No.
But to him, like him, he just like has a natural.
Yeah.
He's so natural
and
about
And he's very American. Very American.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though this was a big hit, like, all around the world, really. Yeah.
Well, that's why it was a big hit around the world. He's just very American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk a little bit, because some people were talking about the soundtrack for this. This is one of the most 80s soundtracks. The thing about it is that pretty much every song on this soundtrack was also a massive hit.
Yeah.
You know, The Heat Is On, that Glenn Frey song, Pointer Sisters songs.
Nasty Girl.
Neutron Dance, and then there was that. There was like Axel F, obviously, like Harold Faltermeyer.
Yeah.
That song, I had forgotten what an earworm that fucking song is, because like when we watched the movie, I'm like, it's still like stuck in my head to this day. You know what I mean? That was like a couple days ago. But this movie was like, not only the movie itself, but like I said, the music from it was just like this massive cultural phenomenon. They even had like MTV had videos for every single one of the fucking songs on this. I think Patti LaBelle on there too on the soundtrack, I want to say?
Probably.
Yeah, I remember Pointer Sisters had a couple songs on there. And there were videos for like all the songs, and they would play them on MTV like all the fucking time. And they had, you know, clips from the movies and everything. Mm. Some people also brought up Surge, the best character.
Yeah, Surge.
Surge has
to make an appearance in every fucking. If there is going to be another, which I'm pretty sure there's going to be another fucking Axel Foley movie, Surge has to make an appearance.
Bronson Pinchot is still
in every
alive,
fucking
right?
Movie.
He's got to be. If you guys didn't know, if you didn't grow up in the 80s, he was Balky on Perfect Strangers, that sitcom. And so, he's only in this, like, two scenes or something, but it was, like, absolutely.
Makes a huge impression. Surge was the gay character that showed up, and he's always selling something in an art gallery, and really, Axel from Detroit has nothing in common. It has nothing in common with this straight white dude from but when you see the movie, you're like, he's trying to fucking have something in common with this artsy fartsy fucking gay white dude.
I love the interaction between them.
It's a great scene every time he shows
up.
No, I cannot. And then in the second movie, he shows up as a fucking arms dealer selling high tech weaponry and shit to Axel. There's all kinds of cool shit that happens with fucking Surge.
Surge is a really good character.
It was kind of good. Now I want to mention that one of the things that kind of fucked up Eddie Murphy in the later part of his fucking career from the late '90s. Is that the fucking LGBT community started to fucking come down on him about fucking gay jokes. Which, the gay jokes were funny. They were not fucking kind of hateful. They were just, he poked fun at everybody, if you ask me. I think it was totally unjustified. And then it kind of came out that he was running around, that, well, there was a couple things that came out about Eddie. One, he had a foot fetish. And he had, yeah. Which, that might have been a big deal for normies back then, but fucking,
I'm just
from
like,
our scene, we're like, he has a foot fetish? So fucking what? What are
you that's talking a pretty, about? That's a pretty, like, okay. Tame fetish.
Yeah. And then another thing came out is that he was friends with a transgender prostitute. And I'm like...
And again, nowadays,
back then, like, what? And? Me and Jenny hang out in clubs where there are fucking tranny prostitutes fucking everywhere. Some of them are bodybuilders. Remember fucking, oh, fucking, what's his name?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember him? So we're like, so what? So what? You got a friend who's a transsexual.
Well, back then it was kind of,
back then,
it was a big deal.
That was like a big deal. Like, well, what are you doing?
I mean, that's the mid-80s. That was still...
What are you worried about?
That was still like AIDS panic and there was all that kind of shit going on too. There are gay jokes in this, but I don't think they aged, because I have seen some movies from the 80s and 90s where, like, the gay stereotypes, like, aged very, very badly. And they're kind of, like, hateful. They seem, like, a little bit hateful, or they're, like, making fun of it. This one, it's kind of... I don't think it's really making fun of it. It's just kind of, like... I mean, I still love
he was more making fun of flaming.
The one scene where he goes in, where he wants to talk to, you know, the drug dealer guy that he suspects being behind the murder of his best friend, because that's what the movie is about, in case you didn't know. And to get in there, you know, because the guy, the maitre d', he doesn't want to let him in.
Right.
So he like, pretends. Yeah, and he just says, you know, what's, I can't remember the...
So he's trying to become a herpes simplex. I have herpes simplex 10.
Well, he's saying, what? I need to go talk to him before shit starts falling off the man.
Yeah, right.
And somebody came, got tested or something like that. It wasn't him. He said it was like a friend of his.
Right,
like,
and you might laugh at that scene and shit, but let's be honest. A real life James Bond would be a chameleon. He could become anything. And if he had to become gay to get to the target, that's exactly what he would do. And that's what Axel does in this movie. That's what James Bond in real life would have to do. He'd have to become gay for a second.
Well, the thing about
to get
it
to where he's going.
This is kind of interesting to me, because it just occurred to me that the reason why I don't find that particularly offensive is because he's not making fun of gay people. He's making fun of people's discomfort
of the gay people. Exactly.
That's what he's making fun of.
Yeah.
That's where the joke is. So he's not actually
No. He had to become gay to get behind to get around the maitre d', to get there. That's exactly what it was. The discomfort behind it. Tell him I have herpes simplex 10. Or maybe I should tell myself.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, why don't you do that?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. It's a brilliant scene. Brilliant
Fourth Row Down says, Bronson Pinchot does a lot of audiobooks now. He did Horror Store, actually. Oh, that's cool. That's Grady Hendrix. I have it right there. Okay. Now I kind of wonder, I'm going to listen to that. Although I have to say, Horror Store is one of those books that it's better to like have the print version, because it looks like an IKEA catalog, and that's kind of like part of the fun. But it's still a good story, so, you know. John Smith says Eddie's AIDS jokes in Delirious did not age well. Yeah, some of the jokes in that didn't. Now, I haven't seen Delirious or Raw for a really long time, so I don't know how
humor,
well
humor in general, we've said it before, does not age well.
Yeah, which is why it's a lot more miraculous when you see a movie like this that is still absolutely just as funny as it was back in the 80s.
Right.
I think Ghostbusters is still funny, too.
Yeah. Eddie Murphy in his 20s was a product of his time. Everybody was. Doesn't matter fucking who you were. And no, it's just the way it was back then. He was a fucking great performer and a fucking great and a very creative dude and a good American, a very good American entertainer. I grew up with him and we thought he was great and watching his material. No, it aged well. He's good.
Yeah,
everybody misses
like
him.
This is still absolutely funny.
Yeah.
And I mean, most of the funniest shit, I think originally they originally conceived it as it was still going to be fish out of water, but it was just going to be he was an L.A. cop. Right. And then going up to Beverly Hills. But I think it works better this way because it's, like, way more fish out of water. Because L.A. is, it's different, obviously, but it's not different enough.
Yeah.
So
Detroit, Beverly Hills?
Yeah, that's, difference. Like, polar opposites. Big so difference. I think that worked out a lot better. And I have to say, too, I really, really like the interaction between his character and, like, the two cops, like Jeff Reinhold and that.
Rosewood and Taggart.
There you go.
Yeah.
Like, the way they, where he takes him to the strip club and shit like that. I mean, just so, so fucking funny.
Yeah.
Because, like, Taggart is, like, so uptight.
Yeah.
And that he's, like, the uptight, like, by the book guy. And then
Taggart's because airy fairy kind of fucking, oh, hey, you know, do you know how much red meat you have in your bowels?
And, just, and then, well, no, that's Billy, right? Judge Reinhold. He's, the younger
one. Rosewood is fucking. It,
yeah, you said. You said Taggart.
Oh, no. Taggart and Rosewood. Taggart is the uptight guy.
Is the older uptight
guy. Yeah. Rosewood is the fucking
Judge Reinhold is kind of like this sort of, he's not dumb necessarily, but he's just kind of, well, like, I don't know. Maybe he is dumb. He's like not really that bright. And he's kind of, you know, he's a cop in Beverly Hills. I'm sure they probably don't have that much shit to do. You know what I mean? So, yeah, he's talking about how much red meat you have in your bowels and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, why are you eating that? But yeah, that's like one of my favorite scenes too, is like when he orders them room service and like has it, had them take it out to the car, like while he's putting the fuck in. And Judge Ryan is all like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Look, is that shrimp?
Brad says it wasn't a friend. It was a trans hooker he picked up in
that's
LA.
That's right, yeah. I forgot
and then she
that.
Ended up being murdered. Yeah, but that was a friend of his. That was a friend of his.
I just remember, I remember that being like a big scandal.
That was a friend of his.
Like, I'd have to like look up, I can't remember all the details, but yeah, I do remember like.
My understanding was that was a friend of his. I mean, that's the way I remembered it. It was just, but I think it was just kind of like a person in the scene that, you know, I mean, they hung out off and on. And if you're ever in a fucking scene, it's going to have a good scene. It's going to have a bunch of people from a bunch of different backgrounds. And you're going to be friends with them all. It's usually the scenes are fucking centered around nightclubs. And you're going to run into that. You're going to run into trans people. And some of them are prostitutes. Because you know, a lot of you straight people don't understand it. Some trans people, if they fucking really look authentic and they look very convincing, they're worth a lot of money in the sex trade. There are people that are willing to pay a lot of money for that. They're very popular. So you're going to see those. It's just the way it is.
Well, you know. And sometimes, too, depending on what they look like and other factors, sometimes, too, they have a hard time keeping a regular job because of people being uncomfortable with them.
Right.
So sometimes they are kind of forced to do that to make money.
Right.
Which we knew someone like that.
Yeah.
That wasn't super happy about being a prostitute, but didn't really have a lot of other
options. That's where the money was coming from, and it's very expensive for the treatments that they need. They need fucking hormone therapies, and they want surgeries, and they want. So it costs a lot of money, and they have supporters, you know. So hearing that shit came out about Eddie, at the time I was like, that's some weird shit, but now I totally understand it. I understand that. We know people like that.
Well, in a way, I'm glad that it's not seen as weird anymore. Like, I think if it happened nowadays, I think, like, people would talk about it.
Some people think it's weird.
I think people would still talk about it, but I don't think it would be, like, this massive fucking deal like it was back in the 80s.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because back then, it was just like, like, everyone flipped the fuck out about it.
Yeah.
Now, everybody would be like, oh, for, like, 5 seconds.
Right.
And they'd be like, oh, well, whatever.
Right. And, trans people like that can be very cool. They're very interesting, fucking, you know what I mean? They're funny, you know? They're very funny. One of the ones that me and Jenny were friends with at the club was, what was funny about her is that she was built about like Arnold Schwarzenegger. She was a fucking bodybuilder that was trans.
Yeah.
And there was no hiding the fact that she was biologically male. She was fucking huge. It was all muscle, too.
She had, like, really big muscular.
Yeah. Muscle. Imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger with a wig. But for some reason I'm going to want to misgender the person. In her mind, she was convinced that she was female, but she was obviously a male bodybuilder. It was just, But we know other people that are... There are other ones that go to the club that are in the middle of making the transformation. There's about four other ones. We don't really know them that well, but they're around all the time.
The one we knew, I haven't seen her in a long time, actually. She had had top surgery.
Yeah.
But like I said, she was doing, like I said, a lot of prostitution and not super happy about it, but, you know, needed money. And so she had been in and out of jail quite a bit. And so we haven't, actually, I haven't seen her in a long time. So I kind of
probably
hope.
In jail.
I kind of hope that she's okay. Probably like, in wherever jail. She is. Because now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, something, I hope nothing bad happened to her. Because it's been a while since I've seen her. I mean, we haven't been out.
Right.
To Ibar for a long time because she used to hang out there. But I haven't seen her in probably in more than a year.
Yeah.
So I know she was in and out of jail, like I said, because she was always getting arrested. Like, the cops knew who she was because she was always getting busted, but for prostitution.
But when it comes to Eddie would drive around the L.A. area and the Hollywood area in his Ferrari. I think it was a Ferrari. And would pick up hotties from fucking all over town from the scene. And, we're talking about women, but every now and then he would probably going to stumble into some trans people. But that doesn't mean he was fucking paying for anything. It doesn't mean he's having sex with anybody. It's kind of a dirty mind kind of situation where you're reading into things. You don't know what happened. Okay.
And I'm not, it's really none of my business.
No.
So.
Chances are, Eddie being a cool dude, just running around picking up cool people from the scene. He didn't care who they were, just as long as they were cool. That's probably what it was. That's what I'm gonna say what it was.
Slasher Fred said this movie came out the same year the most funniest slapstick cop films did, Police Academy. You know what? I feel like I'm gonna have to rewatch some of this. I remember seeing the first Police Academy, and I think I saw that. Which one was Citizens on Patrol? Was that the second one or the third one? They made, like, how many did they make? 10? 50? There was a lot. But I remember seeing the first couple and then being funny, but I don't know, you know, I don't know how they would age because it's been like a fucking million years since I've seen those. And Grimthers then said about Judge Reinhold in the most accurate masturbation scene in all of cinema. Yeah, Fast Times at Ridgemont.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was like a painful kind of fucking scene for a lot of people to watch. Probably they're like, oh... Grantors also says, debate and discuss, Klinger on MASH, trans prostitute, or Section 8 faker.
Grantor says, ironically, Eddie got caught with a trans prostitute. No. He wasn't caught with a trans prostitute. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
He wasn't caught having sex with some trans prostitute. No,
well,
no,
I think
no.
They were just in the same car.
They were in the same car.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, that means nothing.
Grantor says, Eddie's got more kids than Bob Marley. Dude did his part to propagate the species.
Yeah.
Hey, and Danny Rowling said, Matt McCoy was in Police Academy Miami. Hey, I just talked about the movie Abominable, which he was also in. I thought maybe I saw that. Maybe that's why he was familiar. Well, Matt McCoy, he was familiar because he was in Hand That Rocks the Cradle. That's where I knew him from. But I might be remembering him from Police Academy Miami, too. But, so... I can't believe, like, everybody here has probably seen Beverly Hills Cop, right? I feel like everybody in the world has seen Beverly Hills Cop. Except maybe if you're, like, really young. You get a pass then.
Yeah, but if you're young, you need to see it.
I mean, yeah. And like I said, I have watched, like, some younger reviewers that didn't see it back in the old days and, like, absolutely still think it's one of the funniest movies ever. Yeah.
So it's not our imagination.
Well, see, yeah, that's why I'm always kind of, like, interested to see...
What they say.
Yeah. Although I will say, it's kind of weird. It's like we've kind of talked about this before. It's like a really weird situation that isn't anything like what we grew up with. Because when we were growing up, like, you didn't like the same shit as your parents.
No, that whatever was, they liked, it sucked.
That was fucking weird. Now, I'm not going to say that across the board. Because my dad was into, like, some good music that I liked also. You know, he was, like, into the Beatles and the Doors and stuff. And I like that. But, and I even liked that when I was younger. So, it's not... You know, absolutely, like, applies across the board, but yeah, it was seen as strange if you were into the same shit that your parents were into. But now that doesn't really seem all that weird because now there's, like, fucking 20-year-olds on TikTok that are super, super into the 80s. Like, they're all into, like, 80s music and 80s fashion. There's, like, a whole subset of, like, people on there, and that is fucking crazy to me.
There is some cool shit about the 80s. There's a lot of cool 80s in this movie. But one of the things that was in this movie that was 80s that was not cool was fucking Jenny's fucking outfit. Like,
not the other Jenny.
Jenny's outfit about halfway through it was this baggy gray looking thing, and I'm like,
what was that?
How the hell could you put a woman into some shit like that? It looked
terrible.
That was
a thing, man.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, I know that the character was named Jenny. I was also named Jenny, but I don't even know what the fuck I was wearing in 1984. I'm sure it didn't look any better than that. That's for sure. Because I was only 12.
Imagine if a member's only jacket was a jacket and a pants.
It was like.
Terrible.
God.
Gathered legs and
it's like, well, that's one thing. There's a lot of cool shit about the 80s, and I liked a lot of the kind of some of the fashion in the 80s, but a lot of the fashion in the 80s was awful, especially like for women.
Yeah.
Like what was with the fucking shoulder pads and those big high fucking high ass like aerobic looking like underwear. God damn, that looked awful.
Yeah.
But like, all that aerobics gear that everybody was wearing is, like, regular clothes, like, and leg warmers and shit. Yeah. And I had leg warmers, I'm not gonna lie, you know. So I wore them when I was roller skating. But, you know what I mean? But, yeah, that outfit was really...
Terrible.
God.
So what else about this movie? How much you got there in terms of fucking data?
Not, you know, nothing really. I was just, like, kind of, like, talking about it. And like I said, most people have seen it and have, like, kind of talked about it.
Yeah.
And we talked about the whole, like, weird Cobra situation.
Yeah.
Which...
All right, my take on the movie, as far as 80s movie goes, within the context of this movie, it's a 10 out of 10. You gotta see this movie. If you haven't seen it, you have to see it.
Yeah, I mean...
It's a required viewing. And I remembered fucking part two being even better. But we're gonna watch that tonight. We'll see.
Yeah, so we'll talk about part two tomorrow.
We'll talk about it.
And then we'll... Because you have all three of them, right?
I have all three of them.
So we'll... Yeah, we'll watch part two tonight and talk about that tomorrow. And then we'll watch part three.
We can do that.
And then
I want to see Golden Child.
I mean, we can do the whole...
We haven't done Golden Child.
Yeah, we watched it.
But we haven't...
But I don't think we've done a review on it yet.
No, we're going to do Golden Child.
But we can do the whole Beverly Hills Cop trilogy, and then we can do Golden Child next week, I guess.
Okay.
So, we'll see how that goes. All right. Yeah. I'm kind of like, look, I don't think I ever saw the third one.
The third one's not bad.
I might be wrong. I mean, when I watch it, I may be like, oh yeah, maybe I did see it.
I don't remember it being bad, per se. Just not as good as the other two. You kind of slightly like, kind of like it was thrown together. We'll see. Been a while since I've seen it.
No Need for Me 2 says, the opening and pacing is almost 100%. No spots drag for me. This is really like a very, very well paced like action. There's always something action oriented or something funny going on. It's never boring.
It is as good as the other movies from this year, say like fucking Ghostbusters. It is as good as Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
It's just a different kind of movie. It's a police adventure.
It actually made more money than Ghostbusters. I think Ghostbusters was like second.
Okay.
Right after it, but I remember seeing Ghostbusters in the theater. I don't think I saw this in the theater. I think I saw this on cable like a year or two later. I did see Ghostbusters in the theater. But, I mean, like I said, 1984, man. And somebody brought up earlier, like, I forgot, Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one, came out in 1984, too. Holy crap.
Yeah.
That was, like, a fucking embarrassment of riches that year.
I just can't believe that they attacked Eddie Murphy for having a foot fetish. I like cute feet, too. Feet are ugly. The average foot is fucking ugly. If somebody's got cute feet, though, you do. Yeah, you got cute feet.
Yeah,
but I don't understand.
Because it is rare to see somebody.
It's very rare to see cute feet.
I mean, my feet are just
average. They're good. They're good. They're okay.
They're okay. I just have
my feet are fucking terrible.
Workman like feet.
Yeah.
not
cute feet.
Not cute. Not ugly.
Cute feet. I don't have a thing where I'm pursuing cute feet, but I fucking love shoes.
But he appreciates. Yeah,
I got a shoe fetish, not so much a foot fetish.
Yeah.
Now, it's not so bad that I just need just the shoe. I don't want the woman. They got dudes that are that bad. Dudes that are so bad they don't need the
women. I
just... Fuck the woman. Just give me the shoe.
The shoe doesn't talk back.
Yeah. They got some dudes that are just so fucking bad into it that they just want the shoe.
Yeah, and I can't understand that. Like the object. Yeah.
I can't understand it.
That is kind of weird. It's all on a spectrum, so you can kind of see that's the very extreme end of the spectrum where they don't even need the person.
They don't even need the woman
anymore.
Yeah. They just want the shoe.
You know? Like, which is...
Okay. I know where you're coming from, but it's too far, man. You're taking it
too far. Yeah, well, like I said, if it came out, somebody, like, well, look, man, Quentin Tarantino's made a fucking career out of having a foot fetish.
Yeah.
And everybody makes jokes about it, but nobody's going to, like, you know.
His shit is a little weird, though. He's into feet that I'm not into.
He kind of, yeah, he likes, like, Uma Thurman's.
They're, like, longer feet.
Yeah.
Type of, no, little short, little fucking baby feet. I can understand that.
He likes baby
feet. Little baby feet. You know, I can understand that. But it's the way the Chinese would say. The Chinese like the foot wrapping.
The foot binding, like major feet, all deformed.
Yeah, right, right.
So you could fit him in those
I can, but no.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
I've seen some of those actual, like, foot-binding shoes, like, in museums and stuff, and it's like, I can't even imagine.
No, it was too
far. Yeah, don't, strange. If you haven't seen them, like, don't Google, like, how that, what that did to your feet, because it's, like, really gross.
Yeah,
like,
so you said, no need for me, said the opening and the pacing is 100%. That's right, yeah. Really, the movie is kind of 100%. The ending of the movie ends in a big shootout. You can tell that the shootout is more like wrapping it up. There is a bunch of gun mythology in it. Let me get into the guns before we start this. Some of y'all are gunophiles. I love fucking guns. It has some aspects to this movie. Axel Foley is fucking through the movie. He's carrying a Browning High Power. They came out in 1935. It's a very classic single action automatic. Fucking dual column 9mm pistol. It was retro even in the day that this movie came out, but a good choice. Better than the Smith & Wesson double action autos that were around at that time, or DSA autos, which they show some of those in the flick. Fucking the Browning High Power was the elegant solution. And to me, when I see a fucking civilian Browning High Power, I think of Axel Foley. Now his shooting skills fucked up in the movie, but I'm not gonna fucking talk much about that. His tactical shit's fucked up. In a lot of the fucking things where he's firing at the enemy, his eyes are closed, so he's not staring over the top of the slide. So you know Eddie is not a real shooter. But it's okay. It's just a fucking movie.
It's a comedy.
It's just a fucking comedy. Another thing that happens in him that's not fucking all that is that the bad guy, Victor Maitland, shoots Eddie broadside in the shoulder. Broadside. Should have been this way because he was turned sideways. Shoots him broadside in the shoulder with a fucking 4-inch or 3.5-inch, but 3-inch 41 Magnum or 44 Magnum Smith & Wesson revolver. Eddie's narrow ass. That bullet would have went through 3 Eddies sideways. And it just goes into his fucking shoulder, but he shrugs it off. Now, that never would have happened. Not with what he got.
But like I said, you can't just pick on that movie because pretty much every action movie in the 80s, like somebody gets shot.
What?
And in real life, they'd have been like in agony. And they're just like, oh, well, I got to shake it off. It's just a flesh wound.
He shook that shit. It's the flesh wound. He got shot a long way through the shoulder with a 44 or 41 Magnum. Would have gone straight through 3 Eddie Murphys. Even if it was a hollow point. But he's like, oh, I'm okay. Nah. It'd have blown that face. Hitting bone. That bone would have fragmented like a bomb. Yeah. And then that bullet would have fucking gone right through that rib cage and out through the other arm and through 3 other fucking Eddie Murphys. That would have killed him dead than shit. But it's just a movie. Just a movie.
I mean, you know, if you like the movie, you'll forgive a lot. And like I said, they did that a lot in the 80s. Like, people go, well, they still do it nowadays. Like, somebody in a movie gets horribly injured, not just shot, like, any kind of, like, horrible injury. And they're still, hey, can you be, I'm fine. No, a crocodile, like, bit my leg off, but I'm good. I'll be all right. I'll be all right.
Yeah, I'll be all right. Yeah.
Oh, one more fact that I really wanted to bring this up because this is crazy to me. Remember how I said that Martin Scorsese was the first director that they wanted for this?
Mm-hmm.
You know who another director they asked to do this was? David Cronenberg.
Good.
David Cronenberg directing Beverly Hills Cop.
He would have gotten a wrong, and the tone would not have been.
That's what I'm saying. That would have been really, really weird. Like I said, I don't know. Like, I don't really feel like, has he ever done anything like funny? I don't think so. Yeah. Like, he doesn't really do a lot of body horror anymore. Yeah. Like, he usually does kind of crime thrillers nowadays. Or that type of thing. Mm. But in the 80s, man, that would have been super bizarre.
All right, now my boy Graham jumps in and says, Detroit PD would have issued him a Smith & Wesson Model 66 with a 6-inch barrel. Probably right. 66, I believe, was a 357 Magnum, I think. I had a, what was that? The, I had a fucking Smith & Wesson 586 with a 6-inch barrel. It was 357 Magnum. I think the 66 was 357, too. Now, Grampers was, Grampers, he was Michigan police, but you weren't, were you PD, were you, Detroit Police Department? I don't remember which agency you worked for, but, yeah, then again, although he was a detective, so maybe a detective would have been able to purchase his own firearm. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it would have worked back then.
Right. A beat cop, patrolman, probably would have had to carry an issue weapon, but I think a fucking detective probably would have been able to buy his own. That's what he said. And a Browning High Power would have been a retro choice, but kind of rational in 84. Was it 84? Yeah. 84? Yeah. That would have been older. Because that came out in 1935. But, you know, firearms development pre-computers didn't move along all that quickly. AutoCAD had a lot to do with the development of fucking firearms.
I can see that.
Oh, yeah. It changed shit a lot. And the Browning High Power, 1935 Browning High Power, was fucking relevant way into the 80s. Now, Smith & Wesson was coming out with some double-action, single-action auto 9mm and 40 Smith & Wesson stuff that was kind of nice, but they were kind of bulky and unproven. The Browning High Power was slim and kind of refined, single-action auto. It had a really good grip angle. It was one of the best grip angles back in the day. You just grab it and you go, oh, this feels fucking great. It was a natural pointer. Kind of like a 1911, but a little tighter up around the top of the fucking back strap. Just, you gun people know exactly what I'm talking about. My fucking Walther P99s, Walther PPQs, they got a new version of fucking the PPQ that just come out. They kind of have that same feeling around the grip. It's kind of narrower at the top, narrower than say a Glock, and there's just something nice about the way that they point. Let's see what it's Graham.
Yeah, Grampter said, I was a Fed who worked in Detroit. My official title was Special Agent.
Okay. Now you went by Mister or Sir. Okay. Now could you purchase could you purchase your own firearm though, or did you have to carry something that was issued? That's what I want to know. Because could Foley have been able to purchase his own Browning High Power and carry it as a detective?
Well, the thing about it is that technically, when he went to Beverly Hills, he was technically on vacation.
Yeah, but they showed his firearm back in fucking...
That's true.
Back in Detroit, and it was that Browning High Power.
Oh, okay.
When his friend broke into his apartment and he pulled it.
Yeah, that's
right.
He did
his bullshit.
I forgot.
His bullshit fucking IMT, Individual Movement Tactics, the fucking...
Fourth Throwdown says, I guess this is in reference to me saying about David Cronenberg, like directing this movie. Fourth Throwdown says, yeah, Axel Foley discovers that the bad guy is the incredible melting man.
Right. Grabner says, no, he would not have been able to buy his own firearm. Okay.
Well, there you go. All right. Now we know.
But, so it would have been a Model 66 Smith & Wesson, is what Grabner's saying.
Okay. But like I
said, which is a revolver.
It's a movie.
Right.
So
okay.
I don't want to be one of those people that's like, because I know that there's whole YouTube channels probably
right.
of people being like, well, this is not correct. Blah, 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 blah. But it's like, you know, have a fun time. Just watch the movie and don't think about it too
well, hard. Well, guys want to know about the equipment and the fucking shit that's, is that, you know, we want to know. We don't. It doesn't. It's not.
It's like. It's funny.
It's not going to take us away out of the movie. We just want to know. Well, what would it really be like?
I kind of feel like it does though, because a lot of times, like we'll be watching a movie, and he'll get like all wrapped up in that kind of stuff, and then he's like, "Wait, what's happening?" Because he's like, oh, who's this now?
Graham is saying you could only, in Detroit, you could have only carried what was issued, and it would have been a Smith & Wesson 66. That's what he's, in those days. Okay.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
I mean, to me, I was just like, he has a gun, it's fine.
Yeah.
Let's get on with the story.
Yeah, the guy wanted to know the details.
Let's get on with the story. Let's see what's going on. Right. But yeah, I get it. Yeah. I'm just fucking with
you. The Harleys are out there riding around.
Yeah, it's Sunday. Everybody's out on the motorcycle.
But still, Graham, the fucking Browning High Power was a fucking nice choice for fucking 84, 85. That would have been a great choice.
Yeah. Alrighty. So, man, we went on almost an hour.
Yeah.
So, we're going to watch Beverly Hills Cop 2 this evening.
Yeah,
and we will be back tomorrow talking about that. So, hopefully you can join us for that, because I haven't seen that in a long time. I forgot everything about that.
Jason's asking, is Detroit a really rough city? I'm laughing. Yes. Detroit was the fucking apocalypse, especially back in the 80s and the 90s. 70s, 80s, 90s.
I mean, I feel like it's better now because a lot of people left, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's nowhere near as dangerous as it was because they're all dead or gone. Because
it's mostly
abandoned. It's gone now. They tore a lot of it down. But back in the day, it was like fucking Beirut. It was fucking bad.
Yeah.
I loved it, though, as a kid. I loved it.
Yeah, because you lived there in, what, the 90s?
Yeah, early before 90s. I went into the service.
Yeah,
early. That's where 90s. I bought my first pistol, and I bought it from a crackhead. It was a CZ-75. Yeah, it was a Tamfoligo CZ-75.
Thanks, crackhead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey. Yeah. He got crack, you got
it. It didn't work, though, but I fixed it. Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah. All right, so we'll be back tomorrow talking about Beverly Hills Cop 2. So we'll see you guys then.